Blog Talk Radio.
Sports City, what's going on? I hope y'all out there ready to get this stuff on the grill. Let's get busy, y'all. You already know what time it is. Me and Colin back in the kitchen like we normally do around this time. The call-in number is 917-889-9592. I hope my people around Sports City are definitely in the kitchen, man. I'm having a little technical difficulty, so people deal with me. You know what I'm saying? First and foremost, we got this game going on right now, Thursday night thriller. Oakland visiting San Diego. You know, a lot of crazy things are going on in this game, man. You know, just deal with me, man. I'm having a little technical difficulties. Okay. So without any further ado, let's kick this back off right. Your boy Timeless is back in the helm. Let's go.
What about I be caught in this life? Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up. Wait until the sun goes down, we gon' make this bitch light up. Even when the sun goes down, I'ma make it up.
Ow, hoes turning heads like owls. I'm the man of the owl.
The call-in number is 917-889-9592. You are kicking it with the chefs. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with us. And I got my co-chef on my side, Mr. Cosell himself. Colin, how are you feeling this evening?
Yo, man, it's been a hectic kind of night, you know. We're just keeping it together in the kitchen despite the fact that there might be technical difficulties. Things get a little crazy. But, yo, man, that's life. No matter what, the kitchen is hot. It's ready. It's a college cookout. You know I'm ready to be here with my boy TP Timeless. How are you feeling tonight, sir?
I'm doing all right, man. There's a couple of games going down. Another thriller in college football. Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech are battling it out. And this NFL game on a Thursday night, November the 10th, we got Carson Palmer, the revitalized, young-looking, the guy from San Diego himself, Carson Palmer, having a heck of a game up against Philip. I don't know if it's a football game, Rivers, right now. They're up 24-10 in the middle of San Diego. And we can dig into that game, but the cookout is up and ready. The grill is lit. You know, if you had a topic or a game you want to discuss or a situation that you want to go over, I know we got a lot of things to talk about, including reactions with Joe Paterno as well. But, Tyler, let me know what's on your mind tonight. Throw something on the grill.
Well, man, you know, I think it's like the big, gigantic 800-pound gorilla in the room that you really can't ignore, and that is in the sense of Joe Paterno and the, you know, it's one of those things that I'd rather just get out of the way now because it's just such an ugly story. It's such a mess. But I mean, there's so many ways to go about it. You know, I just figured, I don't know. Do you agree with me? Should we just get it done now so we can move on to other topics that are sports related and are of lighter, you know, just a lighter mood?
I mean, we could definitely overview. We do have a caller that is in queue. We have our Sports City Zone, Ross himself. James Greenwood, welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling tonight?
Hey, I'm feeling all right, TP, watching some Thursday night football for the first Thursday night game of the season. Football on Thursday can't be all bad, right?
Hey, man.
Oh, well, It depends on what side of the coin you're on. If you're a Raider fan like yourself, I mean, you're feeling pretty good right now.
Yeah. I was waiting for that.
I didn't cut you off. Let me finish. I got you. Don't worry. Your guys are looking good, man. You know, Carson Palmer's looking good. Your boy Tywan Jones finally got some snaps, too. He carried the ball a couple of times. But Michael Puss is having a heck of a game. And, the young rookie Moore is actually burning the heck out of Quentin Jammer in this game. But, you know, me and Colin actually brought up the situation of Joe Pop. Do we leave that alone or do we overview it? Do we let it go? I mean, I try to let Colin introduce that. I just seen you call him in the queue and let you in here. So I don't know if we want to go backwards and talk a little bit about the Joe Paterno situation or do we just look past that and start dishing up like we normally do in the kitchen?
Well, I think we should cover it because, I mean, this is the biggest sporting topic out there, and I think we'd be remiss in our duties if we didn't at least cover it. I don't want the whole show to be about it, but I do think that we should, you know, gloss over this a little bit before we get into some more pertinent topics.
Well, what are your thoughts on this situation? I mean, of course he's gotten fired. I know everybody knows because he's a big name in college football. He's gone all around the country. But be it as it may, I mean, literally, you know, the situation of his image being tarnished, you know, and how all of these Penn State students have been acting. They're flipping TV vans over. They're going, you know, absolutely haywire over the dismissal of their coach. I mean, what are your thoughts, bro? And I'll let Colin elaborate, and then I'll get into. But let me know something, bro.
Well, I mean, should have he been fired? I don't know. I mean, I think they rushed to judgment based on the nearly 24/7 exposure that the university was getting from ESPN, Fox Sports, Yahoo, et cetera. I think they made a hasty decision based off of public pressure, which is exactly why I was very disappointed when they started actually hiring people, hiring public image consultants, as opposed to really getting there and figuring out what was right in the first place. Now, what did Joe Pa know? I don't know. And you know what? We're never going to know. And that's a major problem with me. Right now, ESPN was speculating the hell out of it. Everybody and their mother thought that Joe Pa knew absolutely everything. And really, in the deposition, there's no proof of that. And everything there's not enough proof of that. And if it was just based on morality grounds that he knew something and didn't, then why is the wide receiver coach still employed at that university? It seems like they're holding a double standard, and they're throwing Joe Pa out as red meat to be devoured by the hungry wolves, and trying to get this glossed over and over as soon as possible. Which I don't blame the university for wanting that result, but I personally don't think it was right to Was it right to fire him or not? I have no idea, but I think they did it too soon.
Okay, Colin, how do you feel about the dismissal of Joe Paterno and the actions that are going on out there at College Station, Pennsylvania?
I'm going to be brutally honest with you. I read the grand jury report this afternoon, and it was one of the most disturbing reads I've ever had in my entire life. I was about three pages into it. And I hadn't eaten lunch yet, and quite frankly, when I was done with it by page 23, I couldn't even fathom eating. It was.
Well, give it a brief disgusting overview. Let me hear what it said. Overview that, please.
I will not divulge what it entailed, with the exception of great details about Jerry Sandusky and the activities. The repeated activities on these poor little boys, including anal sex, fellatio, inappropriate touching, wrestling, and shower after shower after shower experience with these kids. When I tell you, TP finalists, that it was disturbing, that is a gross understatement. I implore everyone out there, everyone listening, either live or archive, to read this before you formulate an opinion on what's going on in State College, because, quite frankly, once you read it, it changes everything. It puts everything in perspective, and you essentially, every person who is named, including one of the victim's mothers who went to the police but didn't follow up on things, everyone should be held accountable for what transpired with Jerry Sandusky, and that certainly includes Joe Paterno. Joe Paterno knew something was going on. There is a much deeper story. I don't think we've even scratched the surface with what's going on with Penn State. There is this almost like, this Illuminati of people trying to cover it up because, A, Penn State is such a lucrative college football presence. B, Penn State is a college with such a great reputation, and therefore reputation and money speaks a whole lot louder than one man's sick perversion towards young boys. And they were trying their hardest to sweep it under the rug, and I'm sorry to say this, but Joe Paterno is one of those people, and he changed his words based on what happened there, or he just wasn't told the whole story. But the fact of the matter remains, Joe Paterno should have gone to the police. None of these people went to the police. And the reason they had to write this grand jury report is because none of the witnesses would come forward. They were trying to sweep it under the rug in the name of Penn State. And that's it. So everyone involved, everyone named in that grand jury report belongs in prison. And I don't care if it's for only a year or two, Joe Paterno belongs in there as well.
Well, wow. Hold on here, Colin. And I respect and deserves to be in jail and actually should be in jail are two different things. Now, don't get me wrong. I am in no way, shape, or form even downrating what Sandusky has done. I mean, this man, there should be a special place in hell for Sandusky, and he should be prodded with pitchforks until the heavens open up and add more pitchforks. I mean, there's no way this man should be escaping the internal torment if hell actually exists. It would be too good for this guy, especially considering he basically was taunting it and touting it with his book title Touched, Please Don't Make Me Throw Up. But at the same time, I mean, there are a lot of things going on here, and just to throw this out in a blanket statement that everybody involved, and trust me, is it a crime? It is not a crime. What Joe Paterno did, should it be? Absolutely. Withholding that information from the police and instead going to campus police and the athletic director, I mean, that does deserve jail time, but it won't get it. And the other two guys who are getting arrested for this outside of Sandusky are getting arrested for perjury and not for – there's no law in the books about holding this back. Now, Penn State is going to suffer the ultimate brunt for this. First of all, it was the structure that let it happen. It was the structure that that did everything for this. I mean, the structure created this monster. And now I have a feeling they're going to get extreme economic sanctions from the government because they did not report these crimes. There's a lot of things. I mean, this is just the beginning for what's going on there in Penn State.
Well, you know, the thing that really irks me the most about Joe Paterno is knowing what he knew, not going to the police, and then having the audacity to say, well, you know what, I'll retire when this season is over. No. Two right things he should have done. And this is a man who I respect, all right, ran a football program with a 90% graduation rate. That is unheard of in NCAA Division I football. That is incredible. Did unbelievable things for people, for troubled youths who were talented athletes. He should be commended for what he did for the first 40 years of his coaching. But they all knew there that something was wrong with Sandusky. He was always flanked by kids, and therefore I believe he was forced into retirement in 99. And because they didn't want to raise any eyebrows or anything, gave him full access to everything that Penn State offers. Now, where Paterno screwed up, one, he did not alert the authorities, and he should have. Two, he should have retired on the spot. Because any man with any sensibility whatsoever, given these circumstances, given the horrendous acts committed by one of his staff, and they knew it. They absolutely knew it. And to not retire right on the spot, to have to get fired is beyond me. And for someone who has done so much good for less fortunate people, it blows my mind that this is what it has come to for Joe Paterno. But guess what, guys? You reap what you sow. Joe Paterno, you made your bed, now you sleep in it, and your entire legacy is shot. Whether or not that is perfect retribution for not telling the cop, I don't know. I'm not in a position to say what's right and what's wrong in law, because I'm not a lawyer. But I will tell you this much. He should have retired on the spot any more than should have alerted the authorities that this predator was out there doing things.
Well, here's how I feel about this, you know what I'm saying? And it's not right and it's not justifiable, but this is how I feel Joe tried to deal with the situation. One, we all can agree he's been there for far too long to let something like this come in and tarnish his image, even though he shouldn't have covered it up. But two, the situation that I see is that something like this arising, being, you know, around for so long of a time, that you know, he's trying to go out on a, you know, on a good note, you know what I'm saying, and not letting, you know, other coaches that are around him mess up his image in college football. But we all can agree, and I agree myself, that he definitely should have actually, you know, spoken up and got these guys, you know, basically removed or did any, you know, official legal action to make this thing go down the right way. But he didn't. This is something that's hanging over his head. I didn't hear about that situation until you just discussed it, Colin. I did not know it was that graphic, and that's just, you know, ridiculous. And especially for the people around the school. I don't know if it was just the football team or people that were in the showers around there, but that's just crazy that these coaches are attacking these, or I don't really want to call it attacking, but, you know, abusing these kids in that manner. And being respected around a university like they are is just very questionable to me, and I don't agree with any of it. And it's bad that Joe Paterno is in the midst of this, especially how long he's been around that school and being a respected individual. I mean, in the situation that I'm looking at, that his image may be tarnished, his legacy as a football coach in Penn State should be may be tarnished, but I don't think it shouldn't, because he's done a lot, even though I think he should have been gone for a while. You know, but he's been coaching for over, what, 40 years now. So, granted, it's time for something new. It's at the wrong time right now, at the end of their college football season, and they have to make something happen right now.
Well, the most despicable thing about it is there are so many people, fellow coaches. The fact that McQuarrie has not been relieved of his duties, even though he was the one who witnessed it in 2002, and this guy is still getting paid. He's still a part of their staff. I mean, that blows my mind. Why is this man still there? Why is he allowed to be a member of the staff? He's been removed from the sidelines this coming game. That is BS. That is absolute lunacy. The man should be fired. Everyone, and I realized one of the custodians who witnessed one of these acts is no longer capable of giving his testimony. He's suffering from dementia, and he is now in a home and can't testify. But otherwise, everyone who knew about this should have gone straight to the authorities. And I've got a very close friend of mine whose younger brother is Silas Redd. Silas Redd is number 25 and is a starter for the Penn State Nittany Lions. I sent him a text message. I gave him a couple days leniency, and I sent him a text. I said, how are these kids going to possibly get through this? And he said point blank, I don't know, man. This program is shot. And that is the fact of the matter. But every single one of these people should suffer some sort of consequence for what these poor, at least 8 young men have gone through.
And this is where you this is I just want to make one last comment, TP, and then I promise we can move on. But this is something we absolutely agree on, which is exactly why I feel that Joe. I don't think the Penn State board really cares what they want. What they do care about, they care about saving as much of the reputation and image of the school as possible. And do they care that kids got raped? I'm sure they care that kids got raped. That's not what I'm saying. But I think that they're trying to get as much of the press off their backs as humanly possible. And basically they did that when they got rid of what had turned into the face of the scandal. The face of the scandal, and I blame ESPN and whomever. I mean, they did not put the proper face on the scandal. I think that's what bothers me the most. It's not that Joe Pa is necessarily innocent and shouldn't have gotten fired, but it seems that the coverage, I mean, you hear Joe Pa's name 6 times for every 1 time you hear Sandusky's name. You hear Joe Pa's name 12 times for every time you hear the guy they so vehemently decide to call the graduate student. They don't even call him by his name, and they go up and down the list. But Joe Pa's name has become the face of the scandal, and they act as if he was the one that was doing these heinous and absolutely brutal acts. And
I agree.
I
wholeheartedly agree that the media has totally mishandled this, and they're going with what sells. But we're also talking about the very same media that decides that the Kardashian divorce should be on the front pages of every newspaper. But here's the thing that really disgusts me. We're talking about Penn State, and essentially what it comes down to is the face of their university, the face of their college, the face of this entire campus is more important to them than little boys being sodomized by a pervert in their very own showers. That's what it comes down to. Penn State's priorities are all effed up, and they have made it abundantly clear for the entire world to know. And guess what? No matter what they do, no matter who they fire, this storm has just started brewing, and it is not going to go away. This is probably the biggest controversy we are ever going to see in our lifetime for a major sports brand. This is as big as it gets. It is not going away anytime soon. It has only just begun, and it's only going to get deeper, and it's only going to get worse. And it only proves that for these people, for Penn State University, their priorities are Penn State first, everyone else second. And that is deplorable.
Well, of course it is not going to go anywhere until I want to say this is like a 5 or 10 year window till everybody forgets what goes on, you know. So at the end of the day, I mean, Joe Paterno, I feel for you, man. I've been watching, you know, all of college football, I say, till I was about like 7 or 8 years old. I remember all of the good games, especially when Blair Thomas came in there and started running the ball and he started getting the key, John Carter. He was responsible for a lot of all of those guys coming there, a big-time motivator, man. So at the end of the day, I don't want it to tarnish his coaching image, but, you know, for him to cover this situation up, it's not going to be forgotten. It's going to be a hard pill for them to swallow. And at the end of the day, man, I'm just hoping that he could rest well and, you know, go on living his life the best that he can, because a lot of these people that, you know, coach to their late, let's just say late 60s, late 70s, they basically are coaches for life. You know what I'm saying? Now that Bobby Bowden's out of the sport, he has health issues, you know, rest in peace, Al Davis, his situation. He owned the team until he basically left the game without, you know, with his health situation. So I'm hoping Paterno can, you know, do the best that he can, whether it's going to a gym, you know, whatever. I don't even want to just say go to a gym or whatever, but it's just tough to just see a respected individual like him leave this way. And if his health starts declining, because he's not out there with the team and having his adrenaline pump or whatever, man, it's just tough for me. At the end of the day, I didn't want to see it go down like this, but, you know, a lot of people are going to talk about it until, I really say, till the college season is done and it's going to be the debacle that's been covered up all around, you know, that Nittany Lions situation. So.
I think this is the death of Paterno. I would be surprised if he's alive by summer, to be honest with you, because something like this is what was keeping him alive, and the man is barely making it through press conferences. I think unfortunately this is the end of Paterno. I give him till June, unfortunately. But same time, he could have saved face. He would have been much more of a hero if he had gone to the authorities and gotten Sandusky thrown in prison 9 years ago. And here we are 9 years later, and he is leaving this glorious, coaching legacy. It's forever tarnished, and that's it for Joe Paterno. And it's based on one simple decision, not alerting the authorities about this sexual deviant, this sexual predator. And as much as I respect Joe Paterno, as I said before, he's made his bed, now he's got to sleep in it.
Okay, fellas, so I don't know if we want to wrap this situation up and keep it moving. We have a couple of topics that we want to discuss, man. I definitely want to go over this game that's going down right now with Oakland actually up by a touchdown up against the San Diego Chargers. So I'm going to come to you first, Colin, and hear your thoughts on this game so far. It's in the beginning of the fourth quarter. The Raiders do have the ball. Do the Chargers actually catch up and make this interesting, or does Carson actually get his first win with the Raiders organization?
I think the Raiders are actually going to pull this out. I think Carson Palmer is slowly but steadily returning to NFL form. I think Raiders fans have something to be excited about come next September. I don't know how the NFC West, or rather AFC West, is going to pan out, but I do know this much. There is much disarray in the locker room of San Diego and out on the field of San Diego, because they had an anonymous player, and there's two things I hate about this story. I don't know if you heard about it, but an anonymous player on the San Diego Chargers said Antonio Gates is looking cold and fat, and Phillip Rivers could only do so much. Our team looked good when Phillip Rivers was playing well. Now he's not playing well, and it's all going down the tube. So clearly there's some dissension going on in the locker room with San Diego, and that is going to translate to the field. I really think there's big trouble in San Diego. But the two things I hate about the anonymous quote are, one, if you're going to say something about your own team, friggin' let them know who you are so you can represent yourself in the locker room. You're a football player. Be a man. It's a man's sport. Be a man. The second thing I don't like about it is, what good are you going to do for your team by talking trash about one of your stars? Now, granted, Antonio Gates has not been the same player since he's been injured, and he can't work out the same way. He's, overweight. That's fine. But let's face facts here. You're not going to get anything accomplished for your team by talking that kind of jibber-jabber to quote Mr. T. So I think Oakland's going to hold on and get a win, and I think Carson Palmer is going to start returning to football form.
Okay, well, I can't wait to elaborate on what you just said, Colin. But, Broth, what are your thoughts on this game and moving forward with the team? How do you feel about the situation?
Well, I think that San Diego is in trouble. I think they are in trouble. Right now they're showing that their defense can get tired out easily. That points to a conditioning issue. They can show that can be run on consistently by a power running back, in which Kansas City has one, in which the Denver Broncos have one, and a bunch of the other teams that they face have one of these power type backs. So there's a big possibility that we can see San Diego kind of falling by the wayside. And Philip Rivers, I mean, they have not turned on that switch yet. That's another problem. I mean, it seems that every year around this time, around week 8, week 9, all the collective San Diego fans hold their breath and watch until San Diego flips on that light switch, goes for 6 out of 8 or 8 out of 10 or something like that to beat out and finish up the season. But right now, they're just not doing it. And the injuries are a problem. And if I'm telling you what, if Marcus McNeil is injured for a long period of time, say 5 to 7 weeks, which they brought him off on the cart, that tells me it's going to be probably at least a couple of weeks before he comes back. I bet you they end up last in the division if Marcus McNeil is out for a long period of time. As far as Carson Palmer's concerned, I think I could play quarterback for the Raiders if Michael Bush is performing the way he is, and Tywan Jones is getting his touches and playing particularly well as well. And I had a 4-3 speed type wide receiver there that makes it impossible for me to overthrow them. You know what? I think I could make a pretty decent quarterback too. I said after the first week when he threw 3 interceptions and 0 touchdowns, hold on and wait until waiting for another week or so. And there's Carson Palmer's first interception of the evening, which makes 7 for the season, by the way. But I digress. I say hold on and wait until that running game does not pull his mouth of fire and see if he can win a game on his own before we anoint him anything. This is not Carson Palmer's win. It's Michael Bush's win.
Well, if you can be an NFL quarterback, believe me, let me be your agent to help me do this. I don't know how easy you think it is to be an NFL quarterback, despite if Bush is running the ball like this, but I don't know.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm gonna look at right now, and I hate to say it like this, or I dislike to say it like this, I'm sorry, people, but I really think that this team has given up on North Turner. I think that they're ready to just pack this season in and, you know, just basically look like they're giving it an effort. But North Turner is not the guy to run that team. It's just too much potential, too much talent on that team for these guys to go week in and week out and just look this terrible. I mean, their defense was number one last year, even though their special team was giving up a lot of points. But, you know, the offense was number one, too. It's very tough to have both sides of the ball be as credible as they are. And for this year to come out, these guys are just looking very questionable. And the Raiders will be actually atop the division as of this win, I think. So, you know, I would think the Chargers would come out fighting. They're at home. It sounds like there's more Oakland Raider fans in the middle of San Diego kind of pumping these guys on more than San Diego, and this is a division battle. So I'm not calling that excuse by any means. I definitely think Rivers is definitely missing V-Jack. He's not been hitting V-Jack as much as he possibly can. He's been trying to go to Gates, but he couldn't go there. He's very indecisive. He's more or less concentrated on the flats and trying to get Matthews the ball as much as possible and Tolbert as well. And that's not going to get it done. He has to go back to what worked and try and get Floyd involved in the game and, you know, have these, you know, game-breaker type of plays. I mean, he went up top twice to Vincent Brown, and Vincent Brown hauled him in twice. One of the passes they actually called incomplete, which I'm still shaking my head on why they can call that pass incomplete, but this is what he should be doing all game, all season long. It shouldn't take till November where the temperature kind of changes and you get that football feel in the middle of San Diego before you start playing football. You guys came out of the gate 4-1. You lose, 3 straight. Now you guys are 4-4, possibly going to go 4-5 right now. I question everything that's going on. So I literally think if the team has, you know, the gall to put this back together and play some football and save their playoff lives, if you will, then it could work out for the Chargers. But right now, it's looking like they don't have a shot. It's looking like they gave on North Turner, and I wonder where the people upstairs in the front office go from here. I mean, do they start letting, you know, some players go, some people that are around the organization? I wonder where they look next.
I'll tell you this much right now, man. If Frost becomes an NFL quarterback, I don't care what little amount of money I'm making, I'm getting season tickets for that year. I want to see that happen. I don't care where the team is. I will pick up. I will move. I will go to wherever it takes me to watch Brock as a starting quarterback in the NFL. And I will root. I will get a Greenwood jersey. I will be the only fan there that knows who you are, but I will be there rooting. I'll be like, yo, that's my boy. They'll be like, who is that? That's your starting quarterback. I don't even know who he is. Nobody knows. It doesn't matter, man. That's my boy. You know what? And you gotta do one of those like Meta World Peace or one of those Chad Ochocinco things. the back of your jersey's got to say Sports City Chef. We got to get that publicity while you're out there on the field, starting for whatever team decides that they've given up on their season and needs Braun as a quarterback. But
hey, if 10 people can do it, I can do it too.
Yeah, but you got to go to church a whole lot more than that.
Yeah. I think for the money, I could do it.
For the money, I would do it.
Well, a couple $100,000 or a couple million, anybody going in there, as long as they can make those NFL throws, that's what counts. But
I'll do those little Eli Manning shovel passes every time. I don't care, man. Just get me out there and give me that 7-figure contract. Let's get it all. Yes. Can't wait.
But on
the side note, all I was going to say is I think it's time to clean up shop and clean out San Diego. Kind of time to start anew. Time for a new coach. Time to start drafting and rebuilding because there's a cancer in that locker room, and I think it's more than just one player. There's a lot of things going on in San Diego, and I know they're perennially good and they're perennially in the conversation, but I think it's time to rebuild and start anew. Count your losses.
And after, you know, after all of this is going down, they have just lost another lineman. Well, they have another lineman on the ground that's going to have to walk off the field. This is just crazy that they're being bitten by the injury bug heavily tonight. And they're still within reach. They're without a, you know, they're down a touchdown. They could possibly tie this thing up if Rivers has a drive up his sleeve. But we'll see. I mean, if we want to elaborate a little bit more on this game, well, we could definitely toss other topics around. I'll let the chefs openly get at that. How do you guys feel?
Well, I do have one last point to make, and then you guys can move on or whatever. But there's one major piece that is missing from the San Diego Chargers team, and I just realized it when you were talking about the defense being number one last year. Their defensive coordinator from last year that helped them get that number one defense, and let's face it, you get the other team off the field really quick, then you can really put up those offensive numbers, and if you make a mistake, it doesn't matter. Your defense is going to bail you out, but they're missing their defensive coordinator, who ended up being the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. So I think that's something that's also a bit of a miss here, that they didn't find a way to get back into the get back a decent defensive coordinator into the organization.
Which is unfortunate, too, because the Carolina Panthers, you know, Cam Newton in all of his glory this season, would be a whole lot better if the Panthers could just play a little defense, you know. So, I mean, it's a work in progress, but you're absolutely right, Roth. I agree with you that that is definitely a key component to it. You know, maybe they should recruit Zimmer off of Cincinnati and try to get something going, because otherwise San Diego is in some serious trouble, man.
Well, here's the thing, man. I like Rivers, man, and a lot of people around Sports City know why, because he's my fantasy quarterback. But this kid got guts, and ever since he came in the league, he's been given an unfair shot. You know, he went with that Eli Manning debacle. He had to sit behind Breeze and wait for his shot to come. So, I want him to do well, man. Even though he's a trash talker, I kind of like that type of spirit around sports and football in general. But the way that they're playing now, the way that this season is kind of crumbled, I don't want to say it's fully over because they still have a shot because of how confusing the AFC West is looking right now. But he has to turn this around, man. Hopefully they can put this drive together and get to the end zone and make this game interesting. But who knows how this all goes down. The call-in number is 917-889-9592. I know one of the chefs wanted to say something. Please go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, while we're on this topic, let's piggyback, and I want to ask the other chefs in the kitchen, how do you see the AFC West finishing up, and what are the records of the respective Chiefs, Raiders, and San Diego Chargers? Roth, I want to hear you go on this.
Well, you also have to add the Denver Broncos, who currently are, I believe, one or two games out of being tied for first place as well. So don't forget them. They're not out of it by any means. Although Tim Tebow is their quarterback, so point well taken. But
exactly.
But But with that, I'll say that the Sandy, I want to see what happened with Marcus McNeil. McNeil, when he was a draft prospect, actually one of the big issues with him and why he fell so far, because it wasn't a talent issue, it was a health issue. He has a narrow column on his spine, which an injury like that, that we saw today, there's a possibility that could be a lot worse than how it looked on the field, depending on how that medical issue turns out. But if they lose Marcus McNeil for any significant amount of time, I said it before, they're probably going to be a 6-win team, if not 5-win team, and probably at the bottom of the division behind the Denver Broncos, who probably clock in at a 5 or 6 win season themselves. So the big question is, what happens with Carson Palmer? He's looked better this game, and he looked better the game before that. And he looked terrible the last game, and then his first game, obviously, he looked terrible. So that's the one thing that's yet to be seen. They can win without Darren McFadden, but if Carson Palmer decides to suck it up and the running game can't get it done and carry him that far, then they're going to lose those football games. So I would think they're going to be a close second place. They're going to look, unless Palmer significantly improves in the next week or two, which a long layoff week, they've got an extra three or four days to practice and get him antiquated, so anything can happen. But I'm going to say the Raiders are going to be second with 8 wins, 8-8, even, just like last year. And then we're going to move on to the Chiefs, who win the division with 9 wins.
Wow.
Wow.
In the words of TP Timeless, wow.
Wow.
All right, TP, what's your take on that? You think the Chiefs are going to pull off the division?
I don't think so, especially the way they look like that game up against the Dolphins. They really need Jamal Charles there, but their receiving core is putting it together, especially with Baldwin finally stepping up and making it interesting, because now you got to deal with both of the B-boys. I want to call them the B-boys now, being Dwayne Bowen and Jonathan Baldwin. If Castle is effective, they can do it, because that's another B-boy too. Battle also has been running the ball well, but the Dolphins to get their first win, to come in the Arrowhead and kind of steal that game, if you will, and catch these guys by surprise, is something that's totally baffling to me. So I don't know what the Chiefs have up their sleeve, but it would be interesting if they could pull this off. But okay. So how the AFC West goes, I think the Raiders are going to pull this game off tonight. I still think the Chargers can win this division. I still think they can do it. But with them being 4-5 after tonight, it's going to be an uphill battle, but they have to pull up a string of wins. I still see them losing probably another game down the road, wink, wink, Christmas Eve. I still got a little debacle, me and Brian Hughes, the chefs that were in on the show with Antonio Garay. We actually were talking a couple of Motown jokes with him, so I hope we can pull that off. But they still have a core good team, man. They have a nice offense, and hopefully they can pull it off. But I say the Chargers finish. The winner of this division is going to be 9-7. I give it to Broncos with the 9 wins. The winner is going to have a 9-win season. It's not going to be an 8-8 situation. They're all at 500 right now, 4-4 atop the division. The Broncos are at the bottom of the barrel. I don't know if the Broncos can turn it around. So I think the Broncos stay down there. Chargers 9-7, the Raiders go 8-8, and who am I missing? The Chiefs
7-9,
and the Broncos finish 5-11. I give all four of them some records, but I don't think anybody finishes the season with a double-digit win column.
I agree with that right there. I mean, I gotta give it to you, man. The D-boys. Although I'm not going to follow Roth's lead, I'm not going to kiss the Dwayne Bow or taste the Dwayne Bow, as a buddy of mine has a fantasy team called Taste the Dwayne Bow. I think it's just a brilliant name. It made me laugh a lot. But I'm not buying into the Chiefs because they're kind of like the Giants early season. You know, you never know which team you're going to get. I'm going to, just before I give my prediction on it, I got to ask you, TP Timeless, I'm going to offer you a Sports City get out of jail free card, all right, right now. Do you care to recant your prior statement that the San Diego Chargers are going to go to the Super Bowl?
Wow. They love trying to call Ty out. Listen.
I think this is very fair to give you a get-out-of-jail-free card. I will not rip on you at all from here on in. I won't even bring it up for the rest of the season, the fact that you said the Chargers are going to make it to the Super Bowl, that they're a Super Bowl contender, as long as you take this golden opportunity right now. This is your ticket into Willy Wonka's factory. You've got a golden ticket in your hand. Do you accept this, that the San Diego Chargers are not going to be making it to the Super Bowl?
I always wanted to go to the chocolate factory, man, ever since watching that movie. Let me stop joking. But it's tough for me, man. And especially with people around Fort City, I know they're going to listen to this and chew me up, man. I still like them. Listen to me. The AFC is up for grabs. I don't care what division you look at. Still up for grabs. You want me to run it down? I'll run it down.
Yeah.
AFC East. The Jets are still questionable. I mean, they have a good chemistry going on. They're still questionable. They can be beat. They rely on their corners far too much. If God forbid anything happens to Revis, what happens then? Sanchez is Braun's favorite quarterback, and I'll let him elaborate on why the Jets won't do that good, but they are going to be at the thick of things at the end of the season. But we'll see if they can actually make some type of either wild card or win the division. You got the Patriots that don't have an identity or a clue to play in defense. So those are the two teams that I give in the AFC East, because the Buffalo Bills, they look like they may be on the decline. I don't want to totally count them out yet, but we'll see how that pans out. The AFC North, you got the Ravens. Let's be real, they lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars. They just squeaked out of Pittsburgh with a win. You got the Steelers that, you know, are a questionable team right now, and especially coming off of the Super Bowl loss. You know, the saying with the Super Bowl loser, they really don't make playoff pushes, but they definitely have the potential to get there. You have the AFC South. I like the Texans, but if Andre Johnson isn't as full as healthy as he needs to be, especially with a hamstring situation going into the playoffs, that's a bad thing, especially with a defensive conference like the AFC. And the Chargers are, you know, an offense that they need to worry about, but they aren't putting it together, and I solely rest this off Phillip Rivers. If Phillip Rivers can't turn this around, then they won't make the Super Bowl. You're right. I will take that golden ticket and use it. If he doesn't play impressive football from here on out, and I'm saying from, wait, so today's the 10th, 11th, 12th, the 13th, so the 20th, so the next game they play will be on November 20th, if I'm not mistaken. And if he doesn't start winning games, putting a streak of games together on winning streak, they're out of there, and I'll use my golden ticket around Thanksgiving or so.
No, that's not the deal, TP.
Yeah, I agree.
Colin was generous enough, and personally, I've still got that episode of Graham Chess recorded. So there's no such golden ticket from this cowboy here.
Still new in the kitchen. I'm only 2 months into it, so I'm being much more generous than people that have been around for a while. So.
But no, I mean, Colin's giving you the one golden ticket. So you're either off of the Chargers bandwagon or you're on it forever. There's no more stops until Super Bowl Sunday on the Chargers bandwagon.
You're still going to pull that episode up anyway. So I'm hit regardless.
but now we can do some careful editing and put the two episodes back to back and say, well, at least you had the wherewithal to say, you know what? I'm going to take this opportunity. We can play it for all of Sports City and all of our listeners to hear the night that TP Timeless admitted defeat, took the golden ticket, and enjoyed Willy Wonka's factory.
Okay. So being a chocolate boy lover that I am around the kitchen, I'm going to use my golden ticket and get out of San Diego. I'm basically gonna do the Terrell Owens, if you will. I'm gonna be a free agent in the AFC. I don't have a selection right now. If I put my heart on a team, I would look toward the Texans in the AFC. I like Arian Foster, and of course, you know why I like Andre Johnson, because he is a Cane. So I would want to see him do it, but he has to come back fully healthy. He has a bum wheel that he's going to be dealing with. So my heart goes to the Texans, but right now I'm going to play free agency. So I want to see what team can pick me up. So I'm going to use it. I'm out of San Diego. If San Diego gets to the Super Bowl, believe me, I'm coming on the air, and they're going to have to mute me or cancel my my contract with Verizon and tell them to shut my phone off. That's it.
Yo, man, San Diego makes it to the Super Bowl. You're going to get a guest job. You're going to get a job as an analyst on ESPN because Miss Cleo couldn't predict that craziness. But believe me, my friend, the New York Jets will always welcome you with open arms. We're always here just waiting for you to jump on our bandwagon. We're still here. We are we're an equal opportunity employer. We don't shun away haters. So when you're ready to jump on Gang Green, we'll be waiting for you. But getting back to the results.
I went with Gang Green Sunday, man. Okay, so you gotta give me some I have looked to you guys to pull off some games now, and a lot of people were going Buffalo. So if you want me to start pulling up shows when I was giving the Jets some type of love, I can.
Yo, man, every time we're making predictions, we might as well write a song called Whoop, There It Is, because you and I tag team like nobody's business. I'm looking out for Detroit, you're looking out for the Jets, and it's this, like, brotherly love thing that everyone's just like, ugh. And I can't say I blame them, but we're looking out for each other, so we can at least rest easy knowing that we've got each other's backs. But going back to the original question at hand about the AFC West, I honestly think the Raiders are going to pull this out. I think the Raiders are going to win the division with I'm not going to even be as generous with a 9-7. I'm going to go 8-8, I think the Raiders are actually going to pull this out. I think Carson Palmer is going to get into Carson Palmer form, and they will have a strong finish. The reason Denver is not going to factor is because a week from tonight, they'll be facing the New York Jets. And guess what? Tim Tebow will be lucky if he comes off that field without a leg brace, because the Jets' defense right now is firing on all cylinders.
That's how they get those extra wins. That's how they win the division. I get it now. That's how they're going to win the division. You're going to break Tim Tebow's leg, and then Kyle Orton, a real quarterback, is going to come in and actually win them a few football games. Got it.
That's exactly it. I do fantasy points based on broken limbs.
This is getting out of hand. The call number is 917-889-9592. We're throwing a couple of dishes around the kitchen, man, and got some topics on the grill. So I don't know if we're going to keep roasting Tyrone Powell on the air and talk this AFC West madness. I don't know if we want another topic to throw out here. I'll let you elaborate on one, Colin, if you want to continue to discuss the situation with the AFC or do we move forward?
I need a breather, man.
I've got one for you, Colin. I've got a topic for you. Because ESPN actually put out a poll of 100 some odd NFL players, and they asked them, who are the most overrated players in the NFL? Before we get into their answers, I want to get Sports City's answers. I want your guys' top five. They did a top 10. I'm going to do a top five because it's right off the top of our head. And
most overrated?
Most overrated. Five overrated players in the NFL.
Wow. This is interesting, too. I like that topic.
Chad Ochocinco.
Oh, God. Please. That's not even a joke. That's not even something to laugh at. Like, I'm laughing because that's just funny. Five overrated. Who do you want to go first?
Ty, you go first.
Five overrated players in the entire NFL. Hmm. Okay. This is me. And I'm not going by statistics because a lot of people might chew me up, but here we go. And there are no specific order because I'm picking and choosing. One, Joe Flacco. I don't like this guy until he can prove to me that he's stern and a willing winner. Even though he pulled off the unthinkable up against the Steelers, I don't respect him until he literally can do this consistently and not have that happy foot situation back there in the backfield for the Baltimore Ravens. Secondly, let me keep fishing for names. This is tough, too. That's a good one, man.
Yeah, it's a really good one.
It is. As of this season, Christopher Johnson is overrated right now. But he's a good talent. Believe me, he's a home run hitter. But as of right now, all of the money that he wanted, and he's still not showing up for that Tennessee Titans team, I give him number two. Number three. People around Sports City deal with me because Bro put me on Front Street right now. Number three, as of this season, DeSean Jackson has not shown up yet. I'm giving him an overrated start. He can keep that and sit on the sideline. Number four, I hate to say this about him because he's on one of my fantasy football teams and he hasn't done well. Tony Romo is number four. Number five. Oh, easy. I see him right now. He's waving at me. Timothy Tebow. They're giving him too many accolades for the one win that he won over the Raiders the other day, and then that one win he picked up in Miami. They're like, oh, Tebow this, Tebow that. No, I'm not buying it. Everybody else is safe. You can breathe again.
Wow.
All right, Colin, you're on deck. Who are the most overrated players in the NFL?
Actually, TP got two of mine. I wholeheartedly agree. Tim Tebow, there's way too much talk about this dude. I think he'd make a much better tight end than a quarterback, and that's just a fact. Tim Tebow is a given. I disagree on Flacco. I think Flacco is kind of hit or miss. And I think people get on him so much that there's not so much hype about him once you get outside of Baltimore for him to be actually overrated. I have to wholeheartedly agree with Chris Johnson. What is going on with old Twitchell's McGee? Like, what is happening with that guy? I can't make heads or tails of it. And even ESPN analysts, one per week, we'll jump out there, NFL Network analysts, one per week will jump out there and say, this is the week when Chris Johnson turns it around. Yeah, I don't believe in that at all. I got to say, and I threw this out there because much like Chris Johnson, and we all laughed at first, but I stand by this, much like Chris Johnson, people are wondering when this dude was going to erupt and how much talent and how he was going to be able to light it up and just streak downfield. But Chad Ochocinco, people had such high hopes for him teaming up with Tom Brady, and the dude hasn't shown up at all this season. He's averaging a catch per game, not even. You know, that is overrated. Wait, what were you saying?
No, I said not even. I don't even know how people could rate him. But please continue.
Will do. Here's one you're really going to love. As of this season, Nnamdi Asamoah.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot Nnamdi. Good one.
Nnamdi Asamoah. I am so happy the Jets didn't get him. I'm so happy. Because right now, between Cromartie, who had a rough start to the season, has been solid since, and of course Revis Island, I can't see why Nnamdi Asamoah wouldn't be one of the most overrated players in the NFL right now. And then last but not least, oh, man. It's these last ones that always get me. I'm going to have to go – I think I'm going to go quarterback on this one. And you know what? I'm going to end up agreeing with TP Timeless again. I'm going to go with Tony Romo. I think Tony Romo has all this, you know, and unlike Joe Flacco kind of, you hear it from Ravens Nation, and occasionally whenever he has a good game, he becomes a part of the conversation, but he's not that consistent week after week conversation about, you know, how good is he, what, you know, Super Bowl capable, blah, 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 blah. Tony Romo gets that week after week after week. I think Tony Romo is and has been overrated.
All right, here's mine before we get to the actual players, top 10 most overrated players. For me, number five has to be it has to be Chris Johnson at this point. This is very hard for me to say because I loved this kid since draft day. I mean, this guy was what was one of my most highly rated running back prospects, probably number two or three. I know he's behind Peterson, but I can't remember the next guy he was behind. He was even higher than Darren McFadden for me. That's how much I was high on this kid. But he's just not the same guy anymore. After he got paid, he's just not that guy anymore.
Yeah.
Number four, Tim Tebow. He's overrated because people are calling him a starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Flat end of discussion. I mean, it's not like people are calling him a great quarterback. People say, oh, he's got potential, oh, he's got potential, oh, he's got potential. But really that potential is not to this point, the potential has turned into nothing. And I believe that it will continue to turn into nothing. Number three. I'm trying to get away from quarterbacks, although my top three are going to be – or my top two are going to be quarterbacks. Number three, Chad Ocho-Cinco.
Thank you.
And he has just completely fallen off the map. It makes me wonder exactly how much that system helped him, how much Carson Palmer helped him out throughout the years, because right now he's got the best quarterback, arguably the best quarterback in the league, if not the best quarterback in history, and is still not producing to the level that his talent would suggest he should, and that's got to really stick in his craw. Number two is Tony Romo. Romo is vastly overrated. People consistently consider him a top 10 quarterback. When, honestly, I would rather have Jay Cutler than Tony Romo any day of the week.
Amen.
And number one, this will become no surprise that the most overrated player and quarterback in the NFL, New York Jets quarterback Mark Sanchez. This guy gets way, way, way too much credit for the victories that the defense and running game provided for him in the past 2 years. But everybody wants to talk about him in the same sentence as Matthew Stafford. Oh, he won two straight AFC championships games. That means he must be amazing. Woo. But no, he sucks. He really, really sucks.
You hater.
I may be a Giants hater. I may be an Eli hater a little bit. But I speak truth to form when it comes to Mark Sanchez. But anyway, here is the top 10 players.
Wait. Before you jump in there, can I just say something? Broth, you are a very well-informed football fan. I'm going to butter you up before I shoot you down. You're very well-informed. You're a very well-informed football fan. You know stats and players as well as any of the people I see on TV or here on the radio. But you do you read the articles? Where do you live? First of all, what part of the country are you at?
I
with you
in
New York.
Yeah, I'm in way upstate New York, way, like, above Albany. Like, just keep on going north.
Like,
keep on going north of that.
Wow, all right.
Just think of Vermont and then go a little bit to the left.
All right. Well, I don't know about you, but every article I've read about the New York Jets, beginning of the season, yeah, it was all Mark Sanchez this, Mark Sanchez that. But the past few weeks, while the Jets have been winning, the number one thing they've been talking about are the Jets' defense, the Jets' running game, and the Jets' secondary. And Mark Sanchez has been a bit of an afterthought multiple times. I mean, not in multiple publications. I don't think Mark Sanchez is now the hot topic. He is the person they talk to because, after all, he is the quarterback of the team. But I really don't think people are now pointing the finger at Mark Sanchez and saying these wins are at the hands of Mark Sanchez when they realize Mark Sanchez is figuring out his role as a quarterback. Don't force it. Just get the ball down the field systematically. Do the ground and pound thing at the same time. Let the defense take care of the rest. And I think that has actually been the real story. I don't think Mark Sanchez is getting that same sort of publicity that he was once getting. So
And you do make a good point. Maybe this is residual from all the years I was sitting there, basically being the only guy in the room to sit there and say Mark Sanchez is not as good as you think he is, and people are saying you fool, and you are right. It's probably a bit residual from years of that kind of torment, but I have to stick with it now. And here are the list of 10. Well, it's more than 10 because there's a huge tie for 10th place. 10th place with two votes each. We've got Darnell Dockett, Arizona Cardinals, Maurice Jones-Drew, Jacksonville Jaguars, D'Angelo Hall from the Redskins, quarterback Eli Manning from the Giants, Brandon Marshall from the Dolphins, Darrell Revis, cornerback from the Jets with two votes.
Man.
Bart Scott with two votes from the Jets, and Brian Urlacher with two votes from the Jets. That's all the 10th place votes. Tied for 9th, and in a three-way tie, quarterback Philip Rivers of the San Diego Chargers, quarterback Kevin Collins from the Arizona Cardinals, and quarterback Tom Brady from the New England Patriots. And coming up at 6th, two-way tie between Tennessee Titan Chris Johnson and New England Patriots wide receiver Chad Ochocinco. TP, are you sitting down? Are you sitting down right now? Are you sitting down, buddy?
Wait, say that again?
Are you sitting down?
No, I am sitting down, of course.
Okay, because this one is going to kill us both, TP. It's going to kill us both. Number 4, Detroit Lion defensive tackle and Ndamukong Suh with 6 votes.
What?
What? Number 3, New York Jets quarterback Mark Sanchez with 9 votes.
Man.
Number 2, Dallas Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo with 21 votes. Put that in perspective, Sanchez has 9, which means it's more than double the votes that Mark Sanchez has gotten. Tony Romo, 21 votes. And number 1, he was mentioned on all of our lists, and is number 1 on this list, Timothy Tebow with 22 votes.
Wow. And where is this list coming from?
This is apparently a poll from the NFL players. The Sporting News interviewed 11 NFL players from 31 teams and asked the simple question, who is the most overrated quarterback? So 11 times 31, quick math here. 300 players, give or take, and so there's a bunch of people that were given a 1 vote, but But that's
31
it. That's
times
still...
31 times 11, I believe, is 342.
341. Very good. But yeah, that's the list. What is your guys' reaction to that? We all said Tebow. We all said Romo. I was the only one, I think, that threw out Mark Sanchez for understandable reasons. But, I mean, which one of those just seems so egregiously wrong to you guys?
Well, I mean, obviously, Ndamukong Suh is just an atrocity. I mean, come on now. Darrell Revis and Bart Scott, when was this poll taken?
This poll was taken, it was recent, because they were talking about, the post came on November 9th, 2011.
So just a couple, a week ago, almost.
Yeah, so that's when, probably when, that all happened. Apparently, though, hold on, there is a little bit of chicanery here. Apparently Jason Hill voted for Darrell Revis twice.
which
incorporates the entirety of Darrell Revis's votes. One guy voting twice.
What a dick. And by the way, just for the record, the word dick is not considered a swear up by the FCC, so it's perfectly acceptable by internet radio standards. So you are allowed to say that, and I'm going to say that. What a dick. Just because you couldn't win it with the Jets and you had to return to your lowly Dolphins, Jason Taylor, you dick, retire already. Done, die.
You're just mad because he was a Jet. Well, here goes a quick note, and Brock, I'll let you get back to the list, though, or what you have in front of you. But I know a lot of people don't care about what I'm about to say, but the Houston Cougars just beat the Tulane Green Wave 73-17 in New Orleans, where they're from. I know you guys don't care, but this is the second time Houston has scored 73 points this season. And they actually have the highest point total scored in a game this season, scoring 73 twice. Just a little mental note, college football. These guys are absolutely ridiculous. And the running back, even though it was Tulane is absolutely terrible. Listen to this line. Charles Sims, the running back, 7 carries, 200 yards.
That's a lot of yards for that low carries.
Hooray!
That is nuts, man. But please proceed, because I know you guys did not care, but go ahead.
No, I'm really glad this came up, because these are the important things. This is just as good as Jesse last night informing us an hour and a half after it happened that Joe Paterno had been fired. Roth, I don't know if you were listening to the show last night, but Paterno had been fired. An hour and a half later, he's like, guys, you're not going to believe this. I mean, holy cow. And Joe Paterno's just been fired. They're covering it on ESPN. Everyone's going crazy. These are the important issues, man. Wow, I'm so glad you just shared that. It'd be timeless. That was good.
Well, it was good, because the one thing about it was that we got Jesse in here, and he was a Ravens fan. He's probably one of the only Ravens fans we could get to come to the show, and he actually got serious on his heels, and that was a good thing to hear and see how Sirius was basically backpedaling, and then they started having a war of the curse words, and, you know, that's when we started twisting out. I mean, I was really hoping that me and Brian could calm him down, but it was just good entertainment in the kitchen, man. If, you know, you got to pick and choose the battle. If you want to have good stuff for the kitchen and people to eat up, or do we want to keep it clean? And, you know, my heart started saying, you know, keep it clean. But it was just like, my mind was like, man, it's just good talk, man. And just to kind of hear Sirius eat words, because I remember, you know, before the season started, Jesse was on the show, and he was talking to Sirius, and Sirius was like, we're going to beat you boys this, that, and the third. And, they slept, you know, and Jesse was doing his thing, you know, basically calling Sirius out and Steelers out. It was just a fun time in the kitchen yesterday, I must agree.
I got to say this much. I mean, like, it went from entertaining to just straight up street. Like, they were just getting street on each other. Like, if they had been in a bar with each other, somebody was leaving with a black eye and somebody was leaving in handcuffs. Like, it got ridiculous. I agree. It was great entertainment value, but hot damn, I was like, oh, man, if these guys actually were to meet face-to-face, someone's coming away with a fat lip and a black eye. It was ugly. Entertaining, but ugly. But it was an entertaining episode, that's for damn sure. And Jesse, that kid is the great instigator, man. He got under my skin with LeBron James. You remember that, like, late August?
I remember that. Oh, I was trying to remember who Jesse was, and then all of a sudden you brought that up, and I was like, yeah, that's it. I remember Jesse now.
It was really funny, too, because my girlfriend's just like, who? You guys had a girl call in. I'm like, no, it's a teenager. It's a teenage boy. She's like, no, it sounded like a girl. I'm like, no, that was definitely a boy. That was Jesse, and he was definitely getting me pissed off because he thinks LeBron James is the be-all, end-all. But at the same time, I thought it was hilarious that my girlfriend thought Jesse was a girl.
Well, he's young, man. You know, you got to. He's 18. He's in high school, man. So I give him credit, man. He came on the show one day.
College.
He was doing his paper, you know. So
yeah.
I got to give him credit, man.
He's in college now. You know, I got to give him props. The kid's going off and getting his higher education. So, calling in from Skype, a terrible connection while in the library, just doing a paper on a Thursday night that's due on a Tuesday. Got to give the kid props.
Okay, so let me make this interesting. I want to get to some of these interesting matchups that we have this week, man. We have the Saints in Atlanta. We have Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, and we have the Lions going into Chicago. We have the Giants going into San Fran. Which game should be initialized the game of the week? I'll come to you first, Colin, since you're neutral.
The options were, I'm sorry, I was actually just addressing my girlfriend and saying, say, honey, I bring you up in the shows. It's fun. What were the options?
Okay. So we have the Saints going to Atlanta.
Yeah.
We have the Steelers going to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
We have Detroit going to Chicago. We have the Giants going into San Francisco.
Yeah.
Where is the game of the week? Colin, you first.
Oh, man, that is tough.
Wait, hold on. I'm missing one. Hold. The Patriots go to New York against the Jets.
I was gonna let you slide on that one and just go with the other ones because if
you leave it to Brock to tell you Sanchez is overrated, so he wouldn't even count.
That's because as we learned tonight, Brock doesn't read the paper. So apparently, this overrated Sanchez thing is gone by the wayside. But Brock just can't let it go. He holds on to things more than ex-girlfriends of mine. just hanging on this. Enough Sanchez already. I've had it. But all right. The Jets-Patriots, that's the division right there. So that is the marquee matchup of the AFC. I'm going to break it down by conference. Then you go to the because I really, you know, the Bengals, they're impressive defensively. But statistically, their defense, defensively, their offense statistically is in the lower quadrant of the league. Defensively, they're in the top 10. That's not going to, I don't think that's going to be enough against the Steelers. I think the Steelers are going to be out for some serious blood, and the Bengals' remaining record, five of their remaining eight games are going to be really, really tough. Especially since they've got Pittsburgh twice, Baltimore twice, and I think they've got the Texans is the fifth game that's going to be a real make or break for them. So, with that said, I really don't think that's a marquee matchup as much as it is based on record, but I think the Steelers are going to win that game pretty handily. So AFC wise, I think it's going to be Jets Patriots.
NFC-wise, the game that really, really intrigues me, based on the way that the Giants have been playing, the way that Eli Manning has been, he's really turned into a premier quarterback at the right time, too. He was really playing well, and then he was asked the stupidest question I think I've ever heard from anyone. Are you an elite quarterback? A question you just don't ask. It's an asinine question. But he has proven that, you know, he is a Super Bowl MVP, a Super Bowl winner for a reason, and the upstart 49ers under Jim Football Face Slap on the Back Great Handshake Harbaugh, you know, they're an exciting team to watch. But when you break it down to Alex Smith versus Eli Manning, I think the Giants are going to pull it out. But I think that is the marquee game of this week for the NFC.
Okay, that's interesting. Plus, I want to see how this firepower goes down with a tough defense. Well, they're both tough defenses. That's a good call, Colin. So, Ross, what do you think? What are your thoughts on game of the week? I'll let you do conference too, you know, AFC and NFC.
Well, I've got to agree with Colin on the AFC. It is Bengals Steelers. This is it's for the same exact reason why the Lions and Chicago is the best game in the NFC. This is a fight for the top of the division. If Cincinnati wins, they're sitting there looking pretty at the top of the AFC North. And while the Packers are the top of the NFC North, basically this is a fight for playoff positioning. If the Lions win on Sunday, then it is a huge blow to the Bears' playoff hopes. I know they will still have a good chance to make their way and claw their way out of the outside of the bubble, you know, but their playoff hopes rest firmly in this game just as much as the Lions do. So this will be a playoff game against division rivals way into the beginning of this, or about mid season, and it doesn't get more exciting than that if you ask me. But that does have to be my last topic. I do have to hit the hay pretty soon, so I hope you guys have a good rest of the show, and I'm out.
Okay, we do have a question from the chat room stating, who do we like in that Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game? Broth just left, and Colin, you just said that you said Pittsburgh would win handily. Man, this is so tough for me, man, and you know, I've been down on Cincinnati all season long, and I've been trying to hold down Marvin Lewis as much as I possibly could. And they're in the middle of Cincinnati, too. Bri, good question, man. Hang on, we do have Colin calling back, and Colin, you're back on. We do have breaking news in the building. What's up, Bri?
How you doing today?
They're throwing me on. They're throwing me on the grill, man. My back is all burnt up, man.
Right,
good question though, man. I don't know where I want to go, man. I was calling Sirius out and said Cincinnati will win, but then again, it's like I'm going for Pittsburgh, and I said Pittsburgh in my picks. I'll keep it funky for Sirius. I'll go with Pittsburgh again. They're coming off of a big loss in that division. And it'd be tough to see Cincinnati knock them off. If Cincinnati knocks them off and puts them on a losing streak, I give the Bengals some credit. But what are your thoughts, Bryden, now that you stepped up in the kitchen and hearing Colin actually going with the Steelers as well as two of us going for Pittsburgh? Bryden, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to Colin.
No.
We have similar sounding names, I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the question again, Ty?
Well, what are your thoughts on the game that you threw the question out saying, who do we like for the Pittsburgh at Cincinnati? I don't even know how I could put Pittsburgh and Cincinnati together. I would say Pittsburgh.
You said Pittsburgh.
Like...
Well, hey, you know what? That's a good way to go, though, Ty. I'll pick Pittsburgh because I'll be right either way. I'll tell you what, please. This, you know, I love good football. I really do. It doesn't matter what the team is. It doesn't matter, you know, if it's an AFC matchup, if it's an NFC matchup. I just love good football. And I got to tell you, all the weeks leading up to this week, I have really not felt the hype, if you will, that playoff-type atmosphere, starting to watch, you know, potential matchups, if you will, outside of a couple games here or there. This week, week 10, I mean, if there is two or three games that you do not want to watch this weekend, I would be shocked. I mean, every single game, it seems like, is a good matchup. You guys touched on the San Francisco Giants game, you know, the Jets and New England, Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. I mean, there are so many good games. I mean, we could have talked about, you know, Oakland and San Diego. There's so many good games, but I'll tell you what, I went with Cincinnati, and two things that really lean me heavily in San Diego are in Cincinnati's direction in this game. I don't think there's any question that Pittsburgh is the more established team. They have the better quarterback and probably are the better offensive team. You know, both teams have one legitimate, you know, receiver at this point. Antonio Brown's a good receiver. Emmanuel Sanders is a good receiver, like Jerome Simpson, but neither one of these, I mean, these aren't what you would call quote-unquote playmakers, but every position, it just seems that Pittsburgh is a little stronger. Quarterback, number one wideout, you know, the running backs, you know, the running situation. But the thing that really separates the two teams for me, guys, this is at Paul Brown Stadium. The fact that Cincinnati is in the driver's seat right now. I mean, granted, they have to win four games in the division, but they're in the driver's seat. I mean, if they continue to win out and everybody else, let's just say, theoretically did in the division, this team would win. This team would be number one in the division. So they're in the driver's seat. They're at home. And like I mentioned before, I know Pittsburgh is coming off a big loss. They're not going to want to lose another division game as they're already 0-2 in the division. But to me, Cincinnati's whole season, really in a nutshell, rests in this game. I mean, that's the way I look at it, because if you can't match the physicality, if you can't match the intensity of Pittsburgh and Baltimore, then you have no shot in this division. And I think that Cincinnati's defense, although they've been outstanding, have really been slighted in recognition, and I think this is going to be the game where you're going to start to see that Cincinnati Bengals defense really carry this offense. I think this is going to be an ugly game. It's going to be a low-scoring game. This isn't going to be, you know, a 35-28 type game. I think this is one of those good old-fashioned, you know, 17-14 type games. I think it's a lower scoring game. I think a field position will be key. But I just like Cincinnati's defense. I like the home field advantage. And the big thing is, guys, outside of the loss to Denver at the very beginning of the season, the only other loss this team has is against San Francisco, who we've talked about. They're 7-1. This team has gotten on a roll. They've beaten some pretty good teams over that span, Buffalo, Tennessee. I just like what they're doing right now. I like the way this team is being coached right now. And I'm going with Cincinnati. I know they're the younger team, but I think that they're more hungry, if you will, to prove that they belong.
Wow.
That's interesting, too, man. This is a team that Cincinnati can do it, man. The one thing that has me wrapped around the Steelers going into this game is I just don't think Dalton can outdo Big Ben. Big Ben just came off of a game where I thought, you know, Ben was a better quarterback than Joe Flacco, which Ben, you can't take too much away from Ben. I mean, granted, one of the Super Bowls that he has was, you know, defensively won up against the Seahawks, but I mean, he's been there. He has the talent and potential to do so, and I think this is a game that he could go on the road and start the vehicle up, if you will, for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But the one thing that works in the Bengals' favor is that they are underrated, right? A lot of people are overlooking them. And, you know, Dalton's been doing a lot of work, and everybody's been screaming Cam Newton, Cam Newton. And I love Cam Newton for the rookie pick, but you got to give Andy Dalton some credit, too. He might actually win the Rookie of the Year situation, too, if they continue this up, too. I mean, they have to score points to win games. So you have to give him some credit, too, even though A.J. Green is out there for him to throw the ball to. But all in all, man, I got to give Dalton a little credit, too. But I still stick with the Steelers. I think now that they got Harrison back, I think they'll put some pressure on Dalton to make some throws. And if he gets erratic, it could be a long day for the Bengals.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one thing I wanted to touch on, Ty, you know, I heard you guys talking about the San Francisco 49ers and the New York Giants. I'm going to hang my Homer hat at the door. But I'm really, really excited about this game because, you know, the one thing we can say to this point is, look, you know what, Alex Smith has not passed for a ton of yards, but let's be honest. He has not been in a position where he has needed to pass for a lot of yards. I just read an interesting stat today, guys. San Francisco in the second and third quarter, which you guys know, that's your halftime adjustments, that's right before half, shows you how good this coaching staff has been. They've outscored their opponents this year 128-20. 128-20. So when you have... when you're outscoring opponents in the second, third quarter like that, you know, you're going into the fourth quarter with a lead, you know, pretty much every game. I can't remember, honestly, a game this year that San Francisco has trailed heading into the fourth quarter. And so Alex Smith has really not been in a position where he's had to pass the ball. So it'll be interesting because – you know, one thing about this game that a lot of people are overlooking, you know, he hasn't passed for a lot of yards, but Alex Smith, Eli Manning, currently rated the number 5 and 6 quarterback in the NFL. Alex is number 5 in completion percentage. Eli's also in the top 10. I think we're going to see some really good football. I think people are going to be surprised. I think that Alex is capable of putting together statistically a really nice passing game. They have to respect that running game. As bad as their run defense has been, play action is going to be huge. Tight ends have really, really given the Giants fits this year. And as you guys know, Vernon Davis, Delanie Walker, each one of these guys have 3 touchdowns on the year. These guys give defenses fits. If they come out in the nickel formation, it's going to be hard to stop the run. They come out in a base personnel. So it's going to be interesting. I have no doubt that, you know, listen, San Francisco's defense is great. I have no doubt that Eli will have some success moving the ball. What I'm really looking forward to is a championship caliber defense, which I believe the Giants are, seeing San Francisco's offense in that situation where they maybe have to pass for the first time in order to really establish being able to be really competitive in this game. Because, you know, if Gore starts off and he's not getting a lot of yards on the ground, this might be a game where they finally have to say, hey, look, Alex, you know what? We might need you to throw 30 times a game because he's only been averaging 18 attempts a game, which you guys know is easily the bottom in amount of attempts per game.
So, Colin, what do you think about this matchup with the Niners and the Giants? I mean, you're actually giving Eli some credit, and the Niners are a very interesting team with only one loss, and that one loss, they should have won that game, but Tony Romo came out with some steroids and adrenaline and put that together. But what are your thoughts, and who do you like in the matchup?
I absolutely think Eli Manning right now is playing some of the best football of his entire career. I think you know, there's a real fire in his belly. He's making smart decisions for the most part. He has the occasional Eli bumbling idiot moment, but otherwise he's making very smart decisions. And this is a team that believes in him as well. When push comes to shove, at the end of the day, insert cliche here, I think Eli Manning is going to be able to easily out-duel Alex Smith. Now, of course, you've got the Frank Gore aspect of the 49ers, but the Giants have been very crafty, and I think Tom Coughlin is one of the even though he's got a Super Bowl ring, he's always under some sort of scrutiny, and I think he gets lost in the conversation for some of the best coaches in the NFL, and I think he's one of the best coaches out there. I think he finds a way to shut down this San Fran offense, run offense. And I really, even though it's in San Fran, I think the Giants are going to pull out a victory here. I also think that if the Giants do that, they're also going to run away with the NFC East. So I think the Giants realize the enormity of this game. There isn't as much pressure on San Fran, considering they're 6-1 in a division that is otherwise atrocious and forgettable. And so with that in mind, and it's also got playoff implications to a great degree, not even to a certain degree, to a great degree. And I think the Giants are going to rise to the occasion. I agree with Breaking News Hughes. I think it's going to be an absolute shootout. I think it's going to be a great, great game. But I do see the Giants. I said it before, and I'm going to stick with it. I see the Giants pulling out the win.
Wow. And that's something that's interesting, man, because I don't know which way to go with this game, because I did get a good slice of humble pie when the Niners beat the Lions, but also I got a good slice of humble pie seeing the Giants go into Foxborough and beat the Patriots. So this is very interesting. Two teams going in the same direction. They're going, you know, with their mindset on making playoff pushes. And I agree with you, Colin. I think Eli is the better quarterback in the situation, but Alex Smith has definitely managed games and has put San Francisco in a situation to win these games. So this is something that I can't totally overlook. The one deciding factor that helps them in the backfield is Frank Gore over what Brandon Jacobs could do. And Bradshaw was actually noted as sitting out of practice today again. So
he's
that,
out.
That bone in his foot is actually a situation that's hurting him, because they don't have that guy that can gash. I mean, they have Ware that's behind Jacob, but if Jacobs is going to continue to carry the ball, he has to run the ball effectively and as hard as he possibly can, because he can no longer try to tiptoe, especially around this defense that the 49ers bring. So,
yeah, Bradshaw is out.
So he's listed out for the game. Wow.
Yeah,
he's out. They just ruled him out today.
Yeah, but wow. Nix is practicing. He might be back in.
Hey, you know what, real quick. I'm sorry, go ahead, Ty.
No, you can go after. I said they both were noted as sitting out today's practice. So if Bradshaw's out, that's going to be big for the Giants to actually count on Jacobs. And Jacobs doesn't really do much but try to go straight forward. But when he goes forward, he sees a defender try to outrun him to the corners, and it's crazy how he tries to carry the ball. But go ahead, Ty.
Well, you know, here's what I was going to say. I picked San Francisco to win this game, and I really did not do this with, you know, homeristic tendencies, if you will. I really try hard, you know, being a part of, you know, the Sports City Chefs Network. I know people, you know, value our opinions. I really try and really deeply analyze the game and figure, you know, where the strategic matchups are, who really has the advantage. And you guys know as well as I do, there's three phases to every football game: offense, defense, and special teams. And the thing is that even though Frank Gore has had five consecutive 100-yard rushing games, and San Francisco's rushed for at least 150 rushing yards in each of their last five games, I'm conceding the fact that the New York Giants probably have a more explosive offense, even without Hakeem Nicks. I mean, you start thinking about Cruz, Ballard, the fact that Eli Manning probably is having statistically his best season, even though I think a lot of people underrate Gore, his ability not only as a runner, not only to break tackles, not only to get extra yards, but his ability out of the backfield. But to me, I think clearly, I think San Francisco matches up really well on defense. Even if Nix is in, he hasn't practiced in 2 weeks. Carlos Rogers, remember, was from Washington, and even last year when he matched up on Hakeem Nix, he played him really, really tough. So this is a guy he is used to guarding. Carlos Rogers probably this year, outside of Darrelle Revis, and there's been many people who have said this that are in the know more than all of us, have said that Carlos Rogers has probably been the best cornerback this year outside of Darrelle Revis. which tells you a lot about this guy's play, about how unhappy he was in Washington. So, you know, if he can match up on Knicks and really limit him, to me, if we can limit the damage on defense, I think special teams is going to be huge. I mean, we've seen three must returns in the New England versus Giants game. Now, we already know that Ted Ginn Jr., I mean, he's a beast in the special teams department. If he can give San Francisco a short field, it's going to put a lot of pressure on the Giants. And I think that special teams is really the department that San Francisco has really been probably one of the best teams in the league in. It's not just Ted Ginn Jr. You got Andy Lee, who's averaging over 56 yards a punt, which changes the field position. He's playing at a Pro Bowl level. David Akers has only missed two kicks all year, and he's perfect on kicks over 50 yards. He's a perfect 6-for-6. Akers, definitely one of the best kickers in the NFL. He's got range. He kicked the ball 59 yards at Candlestick Field, which for those of you people out there who don't know, Candlestick in San Francisco is notorious for one of the worst fields, field condition-wise, and it has a lot of windy conditions. So that shows you this guy's got a strong leg. So, I mean, when I'm taking into account field position, when I'm taking into account the special teams, the defense, you know, this game is going to be close. I don't think this would be a blowout. I just talked to Ty about this. I had a Giants fan that was supposed to come on this show, and he told me the Giants would win this game by 21 points. It's not going to happen. San Francisco's offensive style does not allow a team to blow them out by 21 points. It's just not going to happen. They are not going to allow a team to roll up 50 points on them because of a ball control, a time possession type offense. Now, what's going to be interesting, like I said, is I think Alex Smith is going to have to do more in this game than we've seen him do in the past. But I've said this before, Ty and Colin, the one thing that will be interesting to watch, the only time that the San Francisco 49ers have trailed by a significant amount this year was at Philadelphia, hostile conditions, down 21-3 at halftime. Alex Smith comes out in the second half. They're forced to throw more because they're down. Alex goes 12-for-14 for 209 yards and two touchdowns. So he's shown the ability, even on the road against a good pass-rushing team, that he can be that guy.
Okay, so it's tough, but I want to really give my game of the week. I didn't even get to get my game of the week.
I know. I want to get in
I like
too.
You know what? The game that's actually being overlooked. I mean, granted, every one of these games have good implications on where these teams stand in each division, and where they make pushes, this, that, and the fourth. I like the Saints Falcons game, man. I really want to see how the Falcons actually end up panning out in that matchup, man. Because a lot of people see the Saints as this high-powered offense, which they are, and they did a decent amount of work to the Tampa Bay Bucks this past Sunday. But on the road, they haven't really been doing this well. So I want to see what the Saints could do up in Atlanta. If Atlanta could pull this off, then they actually make it that much more of an interesting situation in the NFC South. A lot of people aren't paying attention to them because everybody thinks that the Saints should actually hands down win that division. But the Falcons have just made it interesting, putting together a string of victories as well. So I do want to see how that ends up panning out. I don't want to be too biased and say the Bears-Lions situation because I could talk about that for days and how many things I see underlying in this game. And also, you know, also look toward that Patriots-Jets game just to think that the Patriots can lose three games in a row. And them being on the road in the last couple of times in New York, the Jets have won that game. So this could be very interesting. Tom Brady better get it together. That offense better pull it together. Well, not just the offense. The offense has been doing okay. But that defense, oh, my goodness. Bill Belichick better have them practicing every minute of the day. Like, they don't get breaks. They don't get water. Something's going on in New England, man. So I definitely like that matchup as well.
Well, you actually bring up a good point, because we can't really overlook the New Orleans-Atlanta matchup, because New Orleans is 6-3. Atlanta, you know, they're 5-3. You know, these are two teams that are vying for the NFC South. I think that is just as important of a game, even more so, really, because when push comes to shove, if you look at the Giants-Niners game, all right, the Niners are going to run away with the NFC West. Done deal. The Giants basically have, you know, everyone kind of counted them out because they said, well, look at their schedule. They've got to play the Patriots. Well, they took care of the Patriots. So I think the Giants really control their own destiny and should, for all intents and purposes, finish off with the NFC East. So with that said, you look at that New Orleans-Atlanta game. You know, everyone forgot about Atlanta. They had a really crappy start, but a lot of teams did. I'm a Jets fan. Believe me, if there's anyone who knows it, it's me. But, you know, as is always the case with the NFL, especially these days, with the way teams are constructed and the way the CBA works, there's a lot of parity in the league, especially in the first half. Well, now we're in the second half, and now the real teams are starting to play real football. And the Atlanta Falcons are a real team. You know, let's not forget where they were a year ago. Let's not forget where they were 2 years ago. You know, if not for the Green Bay Packers last year, the Falcons may very well had made a run for the Super Bowl. So, you know, this game is of utmost importance for New Orleans and Atlanta, especially since it's in Atlanta. You know, and both teams have shown that they've got holes, but they both have shown they've got a lot of promise. So I think that is a game that really should not be overlooked, and I think that's a very good call on your point, on your part, TP.
About time I did something right in this kitchen, man. Yeah.
You got nothing but, in the words of Heavy D, I got nothing but love for you, baby.
Rest in peace to Dwight, man. That actually is still hitting home with me, man. It's another hip-hop legend, man, but... Brian, now that we got you in the kitchen, man, I want to see if you got a topic to throw out here. We got under 15 minutes. We could probably sneak two in the kitchen and throw it on the grill. So, Brian, give me a topic so we can throw it out there.
All right, you know what? I'm going to pick a tough one, guys, because, you know, I mean, we could look at all these matchups. We could talk about a lot of different things. But, you know, we talk about every year about teams that absolutely just crumble in the second half. Of the teams that are in the lead of their division and or one game back, who's the team that you think is going to crumble down the stretch and not make the playoffs? And I'll throw these teams out here for you. AFC in the lead or within one game, you have New England Patriots, the New York Jets, the Buffalo Bills. The North, you have the Cincinnati Bengals, Baltimore Ravens, and Pittsburgh Steelers. South, you have the Houston Texans by themselves. And in the AFC West, you have San Diego, Kansas City, and Oakland. And the NFC side, you got the New York Giants, who are all by themselves, so we'll leave that division alone. But I'm going to go ahead and throw in... because they would be in the playoff picture, I'm going to leave Green Bay alone, but I'm going to say Detroit or Chicago, New Orleans, Atlanta, and those are your teams. So give me an AFC and an NFC team that if you had to pick now that you don't think is going to make it down the stretch, whether it be because of schedule, whether it be because of injuries, or whether it be just that you just don't think that they have what it takes.
All right, I'll jump right on this. In the AFC East, I think one of the teams that has begun to crumble, the Buffalo Bills. They're a good team, but they're not ready for the big time yet. They're not one of the big boys yet, so they're going to systematically crumble. I really do believe that with the Bills. I don't see them making some huge comeback against. They're going into Dallas, a 20-year-old Super Bowl rematch. I think the Buffalo Bills, this is going to be the systematic decline of them. The New England Patriots, I think the entire league knows what it takes to beat them now. And granted, they'll finish with a winning record because it is a Bill Belichick team. It is a Tom Brady team. But I think they are going to, by New England standards, crumble. All right, moving on to the AFC North. I think the Cincinnati Bengals, look at their schedule. I think it's because of schedule. Having to play the Ravens twice and the Steelers twice. You're playing with the big boys now, son. It's time for you to realize your role in the NFL. I think the Bengals are going to systematically decline. In the AFC West, I think the Chargers, you know, they lost tonight. I think there's a lot of dissension going on in the locker room. There's a lot of dissension going on between the players and the coach. I think this is the beginning of their decline, and I think the Chiefs are going to follow suit on that, and I really stand by this. I think the Raiders are going to pull out the AFC West. Moving on to the NFC, I think the Lions are the real deal. I have thought that since preseason. I think the Lions are going to be able to outdo the Bears. The Bears are on a hot streak right now, but and they had a very good win on Monday night. It was a very important win. But I do think the Lions will hold on, and that's going with implications of getting the wild card. Moving along to the NFC South, I will make my prediction on the NFC South based on who wins the game this Sunday between New Orleans and Atlanta, because that's just a safe bet. You know, and the Tampa Bay Bucks, they're only a game out of it for all intents and purposes, mathematically. But, you know, they still have a lot to learn. I love Freeman, but there's a lot of work to be done there with Tampa Bay. And, obviously the NFC West is all wrapped up. So there are my predictions by the teams that are in a dead heat scramble as we, go into the remaining weeks of the season.
Ty?
Okay, this is tough. So, the pick teams. I'm going to start with the AFC first. If I had to pick the AFC West, the team that falls out of that is Kansas City. I think they've shown their cards. I think this is a team that could possibly do damage next year when they're at full strength. They just have too many pieces that are gone. Jamal Charles not being there, Eric Berry not being there, and they're basically jumping around with one leg, hoping that their offense could do it, but their defense is severely questionable. For that loss alone, with the Dolphins coming in there and getting their first win and they couldn't beat anybody, I don't think Kansas City's for real. AFC South, I'll leave that alone. I think the Texans have that in hand. The AFC North situation, I picked them to beat the Bengals, but I think for some odd reason, Pittsburgh doesn't get to the playoffs. I think Pittsburgh is going to make it interesting this season, but they missed the playoffs. I think Baltimore and Cincinnati deserve it. They're going to be hungry and making a push, especially getting close to the month of December where they have to make these moves. I think the Steelers fall short. AFC East, Buffalo Bills alone. I'm not going to say Patriots or Jets because both of these two have to prove to me this Sunday who's going to win this game and what they both look like. This game means a lot to both of these teams coming up this Sunday, especially it being the Sunday night game. I really can't wait because New England has rivalry feeling after losing the playoff game at home, and, you know, all of the Rex Ryan stuff is going to start up. I can't wait for a lot of this stuff to go down. NFC, San Fran by itself. NFC South. I like the team and all, but I agree with Colin. I'm going with Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is close, but, you know, they're missing pieces. They just lost McCoy. They just picked up Haynesworth. Like, Haynesworth was the move for them to make. I don't think Haynesworth has that capability to turn that defense around as much as he thinks and as big of a head case that he possibly is in the locker room and to a team's organization. So Tampa Bay is on the decline as of now. The NFC North, so tough, man, because I definitely don't want to throw my boys under the bus because I know they have the capability to do so. You know what I'm saying? There's just too many lights on these guys, and I don't know if they can handle pressure because they're so young. You know, so Detroit could actually be a scare. that they definitely need to be concerned, especially with the two losses that they suffered at home. They play better on the road than they do at home. They're unbeaten on the road. So Detroit is a question mark. Chicago is also a question mark, too, because they've lost some questionable games as well. It's up to Cutler to step up to get these guys over the hump because Forte's doing his job. Their defense is doing their job. Cutler has to be consistent. So Detroit and Chicago have issues that they need to be concerned with moving forward. And in the NFC East, you know, Philadelphia's already out of it, but I'd go with the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys are done as well. You know, I mean, the Cowboys are going to have some interesting things going down, especially at the end of this season. They got a lot of cupcakes that they have coming up, but I still think that they fall short and they may possibly miss the playoffs.
You know what? I'm not gonna expand on this too much because I don't want to bog the show too much because I know we only got a few minutes. But I'll tell you one thing that's interesting here, guys, because you guys touched on all the main points, and I really believe this. Two things that I just want to quickly hit on. Number one, Ty, right before the season started, you had two of your buddies who came on the show with us who were coaches. And I said the New Orleans Saints will win the South, and they literally laughed me out of the building because I said the Tampa Bay Bucks were the third best team in that division. Tell your boys to get at me. Number two, it hasn't happened in a while. I'm going to come out, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say the NFC North has both wild card teams. Chicago already owns a tiebreak over the Atlanta Falcons. I really think Chicago is playing good ball right now. Detroit is playing good ball right now. I know it hasn't happened in a while, but I think it's very conceivable that we could see the NFC North send three teams.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. What are you doing to me? I don't need these headaches in the kitchen, man. That's very interesting. What did you say, Colin?
I know I'm kind of babbling, not making sense, just kind of because he brings up a very interesting point. It's entirely feasible.
When was the last? I know we don't have enough time to check it, but I want to know, like, the next time we could get up on the show. When was the last time a division sent three teams to the playoffs? That's just crazy in itself, man. But you know, we are at the latter point of the show, man. And, thanks for coming down and throw stuff on the grill, man. If you guys want to get a closing shot or situation that people need to pay attention to, please do so. Breaking news, Hughes, I'll start with you first. Thank you for coming to hold us down in the kitchen, man. Give us a closing shot and let the people wrap up the kitchen the right way.
Well, I just want to say thanks to you boys for allowing me to come on and to do work with you guys. It was a lot of fun. I do appreciate it. The kitchen is always fun. Definitely check us out at sportscitychef.com. And I don't have a physical date. I'll get it for you. But I'm pretty sure the last time was about 7 years ago, and it was in the NFC East.
I'm going to jump in. It was 2007 when the Colts won the AFC South and the Titans and Jaguars were wild cards, and simultaneously the Cowboys won the NFC East and Redskins and Giants were wild cards.
There you
a
go.
Mere
so
4 years
seven,
ago.
It was only five.
Yeah.
See? It does happen, Ty. I'm telling you.
These chefs are on their stuff, man. I don't like the dishes, man. They threw me on the grill, man. I'm mad about that, Brian, man. I'm going to tell him I'm mad. But, Kyler, give me a closing shot as we get out of here, and I hope I can take you to Cincinnati.
Oh, man, I love Cincinnati. That's my favorite city. I hear it's wonderful this time of year. You know how we do. It's the Sports City Chefs, man. Every Wednesday, icing for everyone, the only hockey show brought to you by the Sports City Chefs. You'll find me here Thursday. It's with my boy TP Timeless. Won't be in the kitchen tomorrow or the following Friday, but I'll be jumping in and out, and I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend filled with incredible football. I know I'm excited about it, and if you're not watching hockey yet, what the hell's wrong with you, man? There's no NBA. Start watching more hockey. Follow me on Twitter, at Coach Sell. Check out my website, The Lighter Side of Sports, at www.tlsos.com. And to my boy, TP Timeless. TP Time, my partner in crime. It's a pleasure as always, man. Keep the kitchen hot.
Ty, breaking news. Nnamdi Asamoah will sign with the Philadelphia Eagles.
You guys are nuts. What is going on in this kitchen, man?
This is nuts.
Okay, so Sports City, they throw me on the grill. This is an epic show with me. I had a ton of laughs, man. I'm in the kitchen alone tomorrow, so hopefully I can get you people out there listening to come and check me out at the Friday show, if you will, man. I'm going to miss my boy at the round table, but I hope I can fill the kitchen up as best as I can. But check us out, sportscitychefs.com. 7 days a week, we stay busy. I'll be at it, like I said, tomorrow. The weekend is ours. The chefs are rolling. The kitchen is hot. The grill is about to be doused. It's your boy, Steve Simon. And you already know what time it is. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know,
now they know.
Now they
know.
One, two. Check me out right here, yo.
Yo, the sun don't shine forever, but as long as it's here, then we might as well shine together. Better now than never, business before pleasure. P. Diddy and the fam, who you know do it better. Yeah, right, no matter what, we airtight. So when you hear something, make sure you hear it right. Don't make an ass out of yourself by assuming. Our music keeps you moving, what are you chewing? You know that I'm two levels above you, baby. Talk me, baby, I'ma make you love me, baby. Talking crazy ain't gonna get you nothing but choke. And that jealousy is only gonna leave you broke. So the only thing left now is God for these cats. And babe, you know you're too hard for these cats. I'ma win cause I'm too smart for these cats. While they making up facts,
Frank, hold on, man. I gotta go, man. Sports City, that's all I got. I'm gone.